Hey, you guys, Flickers of Fear time. And as I am wont to do on this show, every now and then I like to throw in a giallo movie because you guys know how much I like those. And this is another one of those times. So this was actually one that I had not seen before prior to watching it for this review. But it was one that I'd always been really interested in seeing because it was directed by Emilio Miraglia, the same guy who did The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave, which I reviewed previously, and it came out like the year before this. Now, he really didn't make a lot of movies as a director. I kind of feel like he was more like a crew guy, and he did other he played other roles. I think he only directed like maybe six movies, and only two of them were giallo movies. But I have to say that these two were actually a couple of my favorite ones. And it's amazing to me that it took me so long to see this one, which is his second one, because as much as I loved The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave, I actually think this one is a big step forward. And I think this one is actually a lot better in the sense that it has kind of the same vibe or the same kind of like crossover tone that he got with the first one. But I just think that would it was like better constructed and it was better shot and it just seemed like it had a bigger budget, which I guess it did. Because what ended up happening with that was that I guess like The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave was an unexpected success. And so he was kind of convinced to do another giallo film. So like I said, he's done some other movies, but most of them were not giallo films. He only made two like that. So this one is called The Red Queen Kills Seven Times. It has a shit ton of other titles, as most Italian films do. None of them were really, I think in some points when it was released in the US, it might have been called Blood Feast. And I'm like, no, not that Blood Feast, like the Herschel Gordon Lewis one. Completely different movie. But it had like a bunch of other titles too, none of which I can like remember at the moment. But The Red Queen Kills Seven Times is a great title and pretty much. Other than like, it doesn't have an animal in the title, but it does have a number in the title, so I will give it that. So it is kind of like a really classic, like giallo sort of title. Now, much like The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave, this second movie has a lot of things in common with it. One of which is that one of the main characters is named Evelyn, even though they're not, they're not the same character. This movie also has Marina Malfatti in it, who was also in the first one. And it also has this kind of combining of giallo and the gothic genres in the sense that you have like a creepy castle, like a family curse, somebody named Evelyn that may or may not have come back from the grave, like to exact revenge on their killer. So it's similar, but then in a lot of ways, like I feel like it's not all that similar because this one I kind of feel like even though it does have the whole giallo gothic crossover kind of thing going on just like the other one did, this one I don't want to say it's less sleazy because it is still kind of sleazy, but it's sleazy in a classy way. There's like not because remember when I was talking about The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave, it had kind of like an S&M kind of vibe to it too. This one doesn't really have that. This one actually has more of a blood and black lace, like Mario Bava kind of thing, because a lot of it is kind of like set in a fashion house, like in the fashion world, which I guess a lot of several giallo were after Blood and Black Lace came out, because it's just such a great way to show a bunch of scantily clad models, show a bunch of like really cool like jet set locations and a lot of like really mod up to the minute fashions and stuff like that. So you can see why that was kind of like a pretty common trope. And indeed it is a trope in this one as well. So I kind of like the balance between there being this kind of like really, really creepy old castle with dungeons and torches and shit and bats and shit like that, but then kind of contrasted against this really super modern, fashion house type situation. So this is actually, it's an Italian-German co-production, and I believe it was shot in Germany because all the signs are German, all the names are in German, even though it seemed like most of the actors were Italian. The version that I watched, which is on Tubi, this used to be on Shudder, I don't know if it still is, and it's on Amazon Prime, but I think you have to pay $2.99 or $3.99. It's on Tubi for free. And the version that's on Tubi is in Italian with English subtitles. But as I said, it's still dubbed. They all were. It just depends on what language they were dubbed into. I do feel like when they release them in the US, usually they dub them into English, but this one was actually dubbed into Italian, because that's what most of the actors were. And, you know, then it was, you know, subtitled in English. So that's the version that's on Tubi. And I'm sure that's probably the most available version, you know, for whatever streaming service. I think this also might have come out. I think it came out on a nice Blu-ray. And I think there's also maybe a special edition Blu-ray or maybe a special edition DVD like a while back that I'm thinking of that had this movie and The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave like as a double feature, which I thought was kind of neat. Because like I said, these are almost kind of like two sister films, even though they have a lot of elements in common, even though they're a lot different, but they do have kind of like a lot of similarities as well. It's funny because I'd seen The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave like probably two or three times when I was growing up, but for whatever reason I had never got around to seeing this one. And then like when I watched this one, I was kind of like, oh, you know what, I think this one's like actually a lot better. So, you know, just goes to show. And you know, from just kind of a cursory reading of a bunch of different reviews and stuff, it really does seem like this is a very well-regarded entry into the subgenre. What, you know, a lot of people really seem to like this one, and a lot of people really do seem to, you know, think it was kind of a shame that Emilio Moralia didn't make more giallo movies, because these two that he made were actually really good. So what you have in this one is there's kind of like a scene at the beginning where there's two little girls who are sisters, even though they don't look anything alike. One of them is named Kitty and one of them is named Evelyn. Now, they apparently really, really fucking hate each other. So they're just like, they're about the same age. They're probably like 8 or 9 or something like that. And so they're always fighting, and, you know, Evelyn's always like stealing Kitty's doll. And so they're all having this thing. So they live in this big, huge mansion, it's a castle, essentially, is what it is. And they live with their grandfather. No one ever says, like, what happened to the parents or anything like that. So they live there, they're fighting all the time. They go in, their poor grandfather, who is played by a German actor, I can't remember what his name is, but he was the same guy that played, I mean, he was in a fuck ton of movies, like, going back to the 20s, because I looked up his Wikipedia page. But horror fans will probably recognize him as Carl from The Exorcist, like the servant in the household. And he was also the witch expert in Suspiria, so there's that. But like I said, he was in a huge, huge number of movies going all the like decades and decades back. His first movie was actually in 1924, and that kind of like blew my mind. But yeah, so he plays the grandfather in this, and he very hilariously tries to get these two little sisters to stop fighting with one another by telling them about this family legend, family curse. So in Granddad's study, which apparently the little girls have never noticed this. I guess they've noticed the painting because they said it was before. But he has this big, huge, like full-length painting of this woman like in a black dress, and then there's a woman in a white dress like behind her, like totally stabbing her, right? So Granddad tells them about the family curse or the family legend or whatever you want to call it, where what ended up happening was way back, I think it was in the 1600s maybe, or I don't know, but there was kind of this whole there's this legend that like there's two sisters in this family, and one of them, like, they hate each other. One of them's the Red Queen and one of them is the Black Queen. So they hate each other, and then one of them got married and the other one got jealous. So what ends up happening is that the Black Queen kills the Red Queen. The Red Queen comes back from the dead and kills 6 people and then kills the Red Queen, like her sister, the one that had killed her. So apparently every 100 years, this curse repeats itself, but always with 2 sisters in this family. So, you know, don't think about it too hard, because obviously, you know, every 100 years, are there really going to be like 2 sisters? What if there's brothers? Or what if it's a brother and a sister? What if there's not 2 sisters? Like when the curse time comes around, like I said, don't think about it too much, but it's just a legend. The grandpa says it's, you know, it's not real. It didn't happen. So, you know, so the girls are like, oh, when's the next 100 years going to be up? And he's like, oh, 1972, which is 14 years in the future. So, obviously at that point we jump forward to 1972, which is contemporary when the movie was made. And, the girls have all grown up. Well, okay. So at least one of the girls has grown up. Kitty has grown up. She's actually played by the gorgeous Barbara Boucher. And she is working as a fashion photographer at a, kind of swanky fashion house called Spring with an E at the end, like German. And Evelyn is kind of nowhere to be seen. There's also another sister, Francisca, and who's played by Marina Malfatti, and they actually don't really say where the hell she came from because she was not mentioned in the flashback when the girls were little. So I don't know where this girl came from, but whatever. So, but she's the older sister, I guess. So the first thing that happens is that the grandpa, who is still alive, I guess Francisca has been taking care of him because Kitty has moved away, and we're led to believe, at least at first, that Evelyn has gone to America and hasn't like been communicating with the family anymore. So Francisca's been taking care of the grandfather in his old age. But then one night, he's laying in bed and he wakes up and he sees what appears to be a woman in a red cloak coming at him with a knife. Now, this figure does not stab him, but he dies of fright. He has a heart attack, and subsequently, the red cloaked figure runs off laughing maniacally, like kind of like a witch or whatever. Now, after the grandfather dies, obviously there's some stuff with the inheritance because he was like rich as shit. Like I said, he's got a castle and he's got like hunting grounds and he's got all that stuff. So after the grandfather dies, everybody gathers for, the reading of the will. And obviously, Evelyn is not there because, like I said, everyone says, oh, she's gone to America. We don't know where she's at. Like, we can't get hold of her, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out, like, the grandfather, what he does, though, was he was kind of clever because I guess he sort of foresaw that he was going to drop dead during the year when the 100-year curse was supposed to happen, like with the two sisters killing each other. So basically, what he did was he's like, well, here's what's gonna happen with the will. However, I wrote all the instructions like in this letter, and y'all are not allowed to open this letter until a year from now, until the 100-year curse has passed, and hopefully all of the curse stuff will be sorted out by then. Then we can kind of distribute the money. So everybody thinks they were gonna get the money, and they don't get the money. It's like they have to wait like another year. So everyone's kind of bummed out about that. Now you find out like pretty early on in the story, like probably in the first 15, 20 minutes, like not too long, I think, after the will has been read, that Evelyn, even though everybody has been told that she has gone to America and is just saying, fuck my family, I don't talk to them anymore, actually, Evelyn is dead. Turns out we're shown in a flashback, which I don't think they ever say how long ago it was. It couldn't have been that long ago because everybody looks kind of the same. I think it was like 6 months or a year or something like that. What ended up happening was that Kitty and Evelyn were having a cat fight like on the front lawn of the castle, just like they used to do when they were kids. You're like, you bitch. They're like pulling each other's hair and stuff. And Kitty accidentally like knocks her into this big stone pillar thing, and then she falls into the moat. So Kitty's like, oh shit, like I accidentally killed my sister. For to their credit, I guess the older sister, Francesca, and her husband, I guess it's her husband, his name's Harold, I think, and they kind of see it happen, and she's like, look, it was an accident, we were just kind of fighting, and she, which it was, and then they were like, okay, well, it's fine, you don't want to get in trouble, we don't want anything to get involved, we'll just like stick her down in the crypt or whatever. They kind of like hide her down in the dungeon, and they're like, and we won't tell anybody, we'll just tell her we took off for America, we don't know where she went, and we'll just all keep mum about it and it'll be fine. So that's essentially what they do. So pretty much the family, like Kitty and Francesca and Harold, know that Evelyn is dead, but nobody else knows that. However, something that Francesca tells to Kitty is that, hey, before our grandpa died, he said that he had seen the Red Queen, or he had seen like this woman like running through the yard like with a red cloak on, and said that he heard her laughing. And Francesca says, and I also heard her. So at this point, Kitty starts kind of like freaking out because she's kind of like, well, what if it's the curse? What if Evelyn? She's like, I know Evelyn's dead, right? And they even go down into the dungeon and they look in the little crypt or the cell or whatever where they stuffed her, and yep, she's still there. She's still dead. So it's like, well, what the fuck's going on? Like, somebody's like running around, and maybe she is back from the dead. Maybe she's a ghost or whatever. So as the movie goes on, more and more people turn up dead, most of whom have to do with the fashion house where Kitty works. Like one guy, the guy that's like the managing director or whatever, he ends up getting killed, like stabbed to death in a park where he's out like trolling for prostitutes with this other woman that works there. I guess she's a model and her name's Lulu, and she's played by Sybil Danning actually in a pretty early role of hers. And I guess his thing, I think his name's Hans, and his thing is that him and Lulu go out to the park and like pick up prostitutes like for threesomes. That's like his thing. And so they're out doing that, but then while she's out kind of like going and getting the prostitute, like somebody comes, like a woman in a red cloak comes and stabs him to death and like leaves him by the car. And then like other people turn up dead too. So it's kind of like this whole situation where it, just like in most giallo movies, you kind of feel like everybody has a reason for killing somebody and everybody is a suspect. And then there's this other dude, Martin, who actually was the guy underneath Hans, and he gets his job like after he dies, and he also happens to be sleeping with Kitty, so it's almost like they're setting him up to be a red herring. And actually the police think that he may have killed some of the people, because it turns out later on that one of the people who ends up dead is his wife, who is in like a mental institution. And when he goes to visit her one day, his wife says Evelyn's name and says, yeah, Evelyn comes to visit me every night and we run around outside the gate, like in the forest, and she's gonna give me a knife to kill you with and all this other kind of stuff. And he doesn't know how seriously to take this because he's like, well, she's having hallucinations because of the drugs and everything like that. But then it turns out that like she does actually try to get out the next night, like after he visits her, and she tries to climb over the fence, and this woman in a red cloak comes there, gives her the knife, and then when she's like climbing over the fence, like the other woman like cuts the ladder so that she falls, and like the spike of the fence like goes up through her chin in like a really gory, that's probably like one of the best scenes of the movie. It's just like this really, really gory kind of fucking scene. So because Martin's boss is killed and because Martin's wife gets killed, so Martin obviously, and like everybody else is sort of in the same kind of circles. So everybody kind of thinks, well, he was the one that had the motive to do all that kind of stuff. And then there's all these other people, too, that are also doing sketchy shit. Like, there's a woman named Rosemary who also works at the fashion house. And she seems to have, like, some shady, shifty kind of stuff going on, but you're not really sure what. There's this dude named Peter who's, like, a drug addict. And he seems to know, or at some point figures out, that Evelyn is actually dead and that Kitty was the one that killed her. So basically he's been blackmailing Kitty, and at one point later on in the movie, this was a little alarming, there's actually, he comes to her house and takes a bunch of money again, and then he just essentially like rapes her. They show it like, obviously they kind of show like the beginning of it, but then they just like cut away to the aftermath, and Kitty is just like laying there, like all, there's like blood on the carpet, and then her eye makeup is all fucked up and everything, and she's just all like there naked and freaking out. And then like they don't mention it again. It was just like a really weird, because like I'm watching it going, that was upsettingly random, but yeah, I'm not really sure like what the fuck was going on with that. But yeah, so like I said, there's kind of all these convoluted plots, and for a long time I was kind of like, well, they were setting it up to be Martin so much that I was kind of like, okay, that can't be him, because the cops think it's him, and that's not usually the way it works. Because sometimes in giallo movies, there is a trope where sometimes it's like, oh, they've like, whoa, the killer could be a woman, but then sometimes it's a man dressed as a woman, or there's some other shit going on. This one, they make it pretty clear from the beginning that the killer is actually a woman. They do kind of make a stop to the fact, well, Martin could just be wearing a wig and a red cloak or whatever. But when you see the killer running around, that definitely does look like a woman. It looks like a woman's hands. It looks like the way she runs. You can kind of see the side of her profile, and it does actually look like a woman. And also everybody, like every time somebody gets killed, when she runs away, she laughs, and it's like a woman's laugh. So even though the cops think that it's Martin because he's the one that had the motive for at least two of the murders, and he doesn't have a super good alibi, or they think that his alibi is too perfect, he engineered it like to be like like that. So you pretty much know it's not him. Now, I will admit that even though I suspected like who was behind the stuff, but I didn't actually know like what the plot was going to come out like, because much like The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave, if anything, this movie, the plot of this one, like the scheme behind it, is like way more complicated. And like for a second, I'm watching it going, wait, what? I don't, you know what I mean? It was that kind of thing. So what ends up, let me see if I can explain this. Cause like I said, I've only seen it once and I only seen it like a couple hours ago. So I'm trying to figure out like, okay, so Kitty did actually, okay, she didn't actually kill Evelyn, but she thought she did. So they had the fight. It was an accident. She accidentally knocked her into a thing, just like you saw in the flashback. Evelyn falls into the moat. However, what Kitty didn't know was that she kind of got herded away by Francesca or whatever, being like, okay, we'll cover this whole thing up. But what she didn't know was that after she had kind of turned away and was freaking out and everything, Evelyn woke back up. She wasn't dead. But then Francesca decided, just on the spur of the moment, mind you, that it's like, well, since she's already laying in there and Kitty already thinks she's dead, maybe I could bump her off and get more of the inheritance after Granddad croaks. So she basically, she's gonna pull her out of the moat, and then she's like straight up takes her head and starts like whacking it on the side of the fucking, and I legit, like when I saw that scene, I was like, damn, it was like really, really brutal. But yeah, so Evelyn is actually dead. However, we find out later on that Evelyn, who we thought was Evelyn, this dark-haired girl this whole time, you know, and the whole, like, even the cops have the whole, like, identikit drawing that looks like her and all this other kind of stuff, which is why Kitty is kind of, like, losing her mind. She's like, dude, my sister's back from the dead. This is, like, freaking me out. So there's that whole thing. So for a while, you're not really sure if it's going to go a supernatural direction. Giallo movies usually don't. Usually they have some kind of natural, rational explanation, as batshit and convoluted as it might be. But you never know, because there have been a couple. I was thinking specifically of Perfume of the Lady in Black, I think, that I'm pretty sure that had like a supernatural angle to it too. So some of them do have that, but it's pretty rare. Usually there's like a rational explanation, but it's usually like crazy. Like it's not usually anything that would happen in real life. So what you find out is that Evelyn, you know, the girl that you thought was Evelyn, the dark-haired girl from the flashback, did actually die. But what you find out is that she was actually not Kitty's biological sister. She was just some orphan that the granddad had adopted way back when to somehow try to circumvent the curse, because maybe he thought, well, the curse won't play out if they're not biologically related. So there was that whole thing. However, there was another sister who was supposed to be Evelyn. I don't know, like, if she knew, or I don't know. This is, like, really complicated. And that sister ended up being Rosemary. Now, was she really the sister? Okay, what ended up happening was that Francesca, who was the older sister, she told Rosemary, who also worked at the fashion house, that she was actually Evelyn, that she was actually related to Kitty, that she was the actual missing sister. Whether that's true or not, I don't really remember, because like I said, this is a very complicated plot. So she not only told her that, and she's like, well, if you help me bump off all the other family members, then we'll get the like the big inheritance and we'll split it. But she also started plying her with drugs through Peter, the scuzzy guy that raped Kitty earlier on in the movie. Peter also ends up getting killed by the Red Queen pushing him out the car window and like just dragging him alongside of the car. So that was like some nice variety there from, you know, the usual giallo stabbings. A couple people get shot in this one too, now that I'm thinking about it. So she basically like plied the woman with drugs and then made her wear the red cloak and wear this like creepy mask that looks kind of like a real face, but not quite. It was very uncanny valley, so that she would look like, so that when people saw her, she would look like Evelyn, and that would freak Kitty out and blah, blah, blah. So she's like, well, basically we have to do this curse And we have to kill six people, and they're trying to like pin it on other people. So they're killing certain people to make to, you know, kind of like pin it on others. But what ended up happening with that was that they kind of like the whole plot got discovered by Martin and also by Herbert, who was actually Francesca's husband, I think. And Francesca, like, he overhears her saying something about what a cripple he was or something like that, because he had like a lame leg or whatever. And so he ends up just straight up shooting her ass. And before she dies though, she actually stabs Martin, but I guess Martin lives. Everybody else fucking dies though. Herbert dies, everybody dies. But since Kitty, who actually was, like I said, innocent the whole time. Yes, she did accidentally kill her sister, but she didn't mean to kill her sister. They were just like fighting and kind of like scuffling around, and it just happened. Like they covered the death up, which obviously is not good, but she didn't do anything bad otherwise. So her and Martin ended up, even though Martin got stabbed, like I said, he did survive, and they end up living happily ever after, and everybody else basically got killed. And Kitty, since there's no more Francesca got killed, Rosemary got killed, everybody got killed. So Kitty's the only one left to like inherit all this stuff. So it was like a win-win, but you know what I mean? So yeah, like I was saying, I can't believe it took me this long to see this Giallo movie, because especially because I had liked The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave so much, and I knew that that Emilio Moralia had done this other one, and I was just like, man, I really need to, you know, and that seemed to have like really good reviews and stuff, and I was just kind of like, man, I really need to get around to that one of these days, and I ended up liking it a lot better. Like, it's really, like I said, the plot is very, very complicated. You really have to like pay attention to everyone's motivations and stuff, but the plot is actually really well constructed. It actually does make sense. Like I said, it's batshit crazy, like this convoluted plot. It's something that you would never get away with in real life, but that's just par for the course, like for Giallo movies. And I like that it had that same kind of like gothic flair to it. But it also had like a really modern, like a very mod 70s kind of look to it. Oh, also, fun fact, I was watching it. And one of the, was it Lulu's apartment or Martin's apartment? But there's a couple scenes in that apartment, and I'm looking at that apartment going, God damn it, that fucking wallpaper and that couch is so goddamn familiar. I'm like, where the hell have I seen that? I was like, that must have been in another movie. And sure enough, when I looked it up, it was the same apartment set that they had used for The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward. Because I was like, I knew I'd seen that ugly ass wallpaper somewhere, like that stripey ass wallpaper. But yeah, it's like all the furniture and stuff like that is just so fucking mod. But like I said, it's cool because it's really, really contrasted against this super godlike Hammer horror castle with like fucking dungeons, and I love that there's like bats flying around like in the crypts and everything, and everyone's just kind of like, yeah, bats. And they're real bats too, it looks like. It doesn't look like that little plastic like on a string or anything. It looks like real bats, and all the actors are just kind of like, yeah, bats, whatever. Although there's like tons of rats and stuff too, and there's actually a great scene toward the end where Francesca is trying to kill Kitty. And she essentially like floods the, you know, and she's also killed Rosemary, because she was the only other person that knew about her plot, or this crazy plot that she had cooked up. So she's actually trying to flood the dungeons, like the crypt area or whatever. And there's this great scene where there's like a water pipe, and all these rats like come out of this water pipe, like, oh shit, here comes the water. And then like the room starts filling up, and like she's gonna drown and stuff. And it's just like, it's a really, really great, very, very gothic, and it's like really cool. But yeah, I really like that juxtaposition. You didn't see that a lot, I don't think. Like, I finally feel like Giallo movies usually were very like contemporary. They were like contemporary crime thrillers. So it's a little unusual to see one with like really like old school gothic elements like this, and I really liked that juxtaposition. Also, oh, I have to note too, not only that ugly ass wallpaper that was in that apartment, but also during one scene, I think it was Rosemary wears legitimately the most ridiculous pair of glasses I've ever seen. And I'm counting Elton John's like big sparkly star glasses and stuff, 'cause obviously he was wearing those like to be glam and stuff. These were actually, I guess, supposed to be like actual legitimate fashionable glasses, and they are just massive. They're massive, and they're like pentagon shaped or something, or hexagon shaped. they're so big. They take up like half the poor woman's face, but it's just kind of like, it's crazy. But yeah, so just like in most examples of the genre, it's kind of gory, I will say. It's like, it's pretty bloody. It's pretty violent. Not as gory as some that I've seen, and not as like over the top as, you know, like Dario Argento or something. But, you know, particularly the couple scenes where, like the one scene where Martin's wife gets like impaled on the spike, like on the fence, and it's, you know, that's really bloody. And there's like a lot of stabbings and shit like that. There's a really great kind of like dreamlike sequence where the Red Queen is like running down this hall in slow motion, like with the cloak coming out, and it's like really, really cool looking. And it's kind of like a weird dream sequence. That's really awesome. And, you know, and I was going to say too that scene where Francesca is killing Evelyn by like just banging her head on the side of the concrete moat or whatever. And that's like pretty fucked up. So there's all kind of like gore in this. And like I said, Peter getting dragged to death by, you know, on the side of the car, that was kind of like a nice change. So you got that. There's also like your kind of requisite sort of sleaze, lots and lots of nudity, not male nudity, unfortunately, but if you're into that, but lots and lots of female nudity, lots and lots of boobies, there's kind of a weird rape scene. It's not super long, but I'm not really sure why it was there because it wasn't really brought up again, which I thought was very strange. It's just kind of like inserted randomly. So yeah, that was a little weird. But yeah, you know, so like a lot of models and fashion shoots and crazy, you know, early 70s fashions and gorgeous locations. Like I said, this was actually shot in Germany. I think they shot some of it in Monaco too, now that I'm thinking about it. But you know, so it's almost kind of like a amazing like travel log of early 70s Europe, like all these awesome kind of locations and then all these kind of ridiculously beautiful women in these like ridiculously 70s fashions and ridiculous glasses and stuff like that. But yeah, this one, I really, really like this one a lot. This is actually one of the best ones that I've ever seen, and I really enjoyed it. You know, like I said, the plot's convoluted, but you can still follow it if you're paying attention, and it's paced really well. It doesn't drag, like, because some of them do, they have, like, long periods where stuff, but this one moves along at a pretty good clip. I think it's only, like, an hour and 40 minutes or something like that, and there's always something going on. So there's always, like, a murder going on or some kind of, you know, or some kind of nudity or some kind of something. So it never gets boring. It always, like, moves along really quickly. But yeah, this is actually a really, really good example of the genre. So if you haven't seen this one, you definitely should check it out because, like I said, I feel like maybe not a lot of people like bring this one up as much as some of the kind of bigger, better known ones in the genre. And this is definitely one that's worth watching. And like I said, it's kind of a shame that Emilio Moralia didn't make more giallo movies because the two that he made were pretty damn good. But yeah, this is actually on Tubi for free if you want to watch it. I think The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave might be on Tubi for free as well. I think it's also on Shudder, so you might want to check there first so you don't have to watch commercials. But Tubi, actually, now that I'm mentioning it, actually has a pretty decent selection of giallo movies. So if you're just kind of getting into the genre, I mean, they don't have like most of the kind of top tier ones, but they do have kind of a lot of the B squad, you know, the ones that are just a tier down from like Dario Argento or whatever. Although then I think they have a couple Dario Argento ones on there too. I think The Cat of Nine Tails might be on there and a couple other ones. But yeah, so definitely check this one out if you're into Italian horror at all, because this was a really, really good one. And if you've seen it, let me know what you thought about it in the comments. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.